The Yep, She Said It podcast is an opportunity to learn, apply, and reflect on different life experiences through the lens of a Black woman. Hey y'all, it's Dr. Marley, and welcome to another episode of Yep, She Said It. I am super excited and thankful yet again that you have joined the podcast to listen to another episode. If you are a first-time listener, what is up? Like, I am so glad that you were recommended or you stumbled across our podcast, or my podcast, I should say. I'm glad that you're here, and I hope that you find some type of inspiration, some type of reflection that you can sit back, explore, and apply to your life. And so as we jump into this week's episode, it's been very interesting coming up with what I wanted to talk about and just kind of explore some thoughts, right? Because I plan and I pray, but I don't ever go too deep, because I want it to be organic when I bring it to this platform. And so I've noticed within myself if you don't watch the show, that totally went over your head, but if you watch it, you know exactly what I'm talking, what I'm referring to. But I've noticed my need, I should say, for music. I've noticed my desire for music. I've noticed my need in a way that it has now become a structure. It's become part of my daily preparation, if that makes sense. From the time of my morning prayers, I've started to coordinate and put back in my affirmations, which I've been on, but not as consistent as they need to be. I've gotten into lately working out to some gospel music. I love a good gospel song. Okay. And playing what songs I play in the car. Like, it's just been very, very intentional for me. And I was curious to, like, how and why am I this way? Or why do I love music so much, you know? And I had to realize, well, you didn't necessarily introduce yourself to music. You were introduced to music. And so I took that and said, okay, let me put that in a bucket. Let me put that in a space right here in my mind and my thoughts, right? And then something else came up and I was thinking, the protective factors that I utilize in my life have come in many different ways, right? Whether it's been from pain or verbal abuse or just challenging situations in life, coming from all facets, right? Coming from sports, from upbringing, to friendships, to relationships, in any category, right? And a lot of times, we don't really understand what they are, how they impact us until we're much older in life. And somehow, there's probably some education around what things are and what they mean. And so I also start to think about, a lot of us, a majority of us really, are not, don't go out seeking trauma, right? Unfortunately, a lot of us are introduced to trauma. So I put that in a bucket. I said, okay, I was introduced to music. And in reality, like many of you all were introduced to music, a lot of us are also introduced to trauma. And so you have to start recognizing that the way you function, the way you think, the way you move in life was based off of something that you were introduced to. The challenge becomes the awareness of how you have responded, how you are reacting. It's something that is so pertinent to our existence, but a lot of us don't realize it. And it also comes in phases, and you may have heard me talk about this in the past podcast episodes, where I talk about react versus respond. Right? Reacting, this is something that I taught in a lot of groups, and I still teach it in many courses that I teach in different areas, even for security fields, education, different spaces. And I explained that in life, we should work on responding. And if you had therapy and if you work with social workers and life coaches, you probably have heard this too. So in life, we need to learn how to respond instead of react, right? React is immediate. It's just what comes to mind. It's our, you stump your toe, you drop the F-bomb, right? It's just a reaction, right? And we're human. So naturally, a lot of us are going to have a reaction initially. But what we need to learn how to do in life is respond. And when you respond, once that initial contact occurs, you don't just go, right? You recognize it internally or what it physically looks like, but then your mind has the ability to process what is the best response in this moment, right? And so that's the area that many of us in our entire lives try to strive for. And for many of us, we end up conquering spaces, but not often the most significant ones. And so the way my mind works now is I had to do research on it, right? I had to educate myself a little more because obviously I know that there's been a lot of research on music and memory and the impact of music in so many different ways. And I found a brief excerpt in the Journal of Biology that spoke about music. And it says that basically that music integrates like sequentially ordered sounds into a coherent music perception. It's a lot going on right there. So basically it was saying is that your mind has a process of knitting sounds together that is picked up when you listen to music. It's the notes, it's the patterns. And even if you're not like a music person like me, meaning I don't have an ear for music, I couldn't tell you what note is what. I barely can tell you tenor, sopranos, and altos. Like I'm really not that girl, right? And so it says that working memory is involved in both processes. The scientists believe that there's a great deal of overlap between working memory for musical stimuli and for verbal stimuli. Of course, emotions enhance memory. And so I hope that made sense. And so when I sat here and thought, I said, okay, so when I took some time to go back in time, right? And I encourage you to sit down and take moments of self-exploration if you don't. And so I realized that I was introduced to music and different types of music at such an early age. So for my grandfather, right, I listened to a lot of gospel growing up from, you know, an old school gospel. So when I say old school, I mean like the early, early Shirley Chisholm, Rance Allen group. The truth that's like, you know, like old school gospel music, right? And then being raised in, you know, in my home, I grew up listening to gospel. I grew up listening to blues. I grew up listening very little here and there, R&B, but, you know, that wasn't necessarily my mom's route, right? So it was interesting. And so as I think of the two, I realize that music, to an extent, had become a protective factor for me. Music helped to articulate my emotions. Music helps to articulate what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking about, what I'm trying to overcome. And so I realized that music is valuable to me because it is a part of my existence. I listen to music in great times and in areas of uncertainty, in areas where I'm seeking miracles, in areas where I'm just lost and stagnant in that moment. And so I encourage you to think about what is that thing for you? And are you allowing it to display itself in life in a way that can support you and help guide you along whatever it is that you're going through? And so you're probably wondering, like, why did I bring trauma into this? And what my purpose and what my goal, at least in my head, was, do you know why you respond certain ways? Do you know why there are certain things that you have zero tolerance for or certain things that you deem unforgivable? If not, it's time to explore that. If not, it's time for you to step back and to really address some parts of you that are possibly holding you back from your next chapter, are delaying some amazing opportunities based out of fear and past pain, which you know, are totally realistic. And, you know, I know if you live in the biblical space, we find that, you know, we're not supposed to be fearful and have fear, but it is a human emotion. And I find myself still going through the grieving process that my fear has increased again, and that my level of sensitivity to be, to do well, has also has fear attached to it. And so it caused me to sit back and explore these emotions and understand where they come from, right? And early on, it can come from, you know, grades and communication around goals and educational goals maybe people have for you and that you've been told and things that you've absorbed over the years. And I find that music has always been a necessity. And I realized that as I've been going through a crazy process, really since January, since the end of January, I've removed things in my life that are necessary. And so everyone's response and healing journey with trauma, you have to find what works for you. And so I realized for about 6 months, I had separated myself subconsciously from music. And this is something that, yes, I discovered on my own, something I also discovered through therapy. And it's just something that I wanted to share with you all. Healing from trauma does not have to be such a individualistic process, if that makes sense, such a moment of isolation. There are ways that things can be integrated into your life to help you through this healing process. There are different types of trauma, and even through grief comes trauma. And I believe that now that I am okay with taking control and acknowledging this in little pieces at a time, I feel that the level of freedom and the ability to enjoy music has returned and now is a part of my healing journey. And so I don't know if any of this makes sense, but what I want you to do is to sit back, recognize what's changed, recognize what you need and what you've always needed, and allow it to return to sender. All right, y'all. So I hope that you were able to understand and hopefully process and apply what I talked about in the previous message. And now we're going to shift into a new area of focus that I said I was going to talk about, which was everything surrounding Deion Sanders. And so as you all know, but if you're a first-time listener, I take a minute or two to kind of talk about things that are sports related, as that is an area that I focus on, specifically sports and mental health, sports and Black women, as in Black female collegiate athletes or just Black female athletes in general. And so there's a lot I could say about the Deion Sanders transition, with him going from a HBCU back to a historically white institution. And so this is number one for me. The main issue that I had, and I talked to a few people and they understood where I was coming from, is that anytime you have a conversation within the family, and I'm going to say within the HBCU family, right? And it is a loud conversation, you are demanding change for all the right reasons. You are calling people out for all the right reasons. And it doesn't matter what color the people are, you are demanding change and support and acknowledging things that have not been done right or well. And so that was done exceptionally well, right? You can see the shifts in the publicity of games. You saw the transformation in just Jackson State's locker room, their media room, and all of that. You saw the cohesiveness between Jackson and other HBCU institutions when there were water shortages and towns were hit with hurricanes, and practice. I mean, so many things. You saw the reason why HBCUs were created, right? You saw the family space. You saw the connection, which I thought was phenomenal. But the issue I had is that you can't talk about what a person isn't doing and how badly they've done you, and then you go and join that team. That is only thing, the main thing that was problematic for me, because it looks bad for optics, period, right? And I think I shared that with a few people I talked to when I was kind of just processing my thoughts. The other side of this is, it's a business. Sports is a business. So if you listen to my episode last week, I explained that athletes need to make sure they have everything they need to have in the event that something goes awry. That your coach leaves, that maybe your scholarship is taken away, maybe you're injured, maybe that program is completely dismantled and doesn't exist anymore. Like, you have to be able to make sure that you can function. And so this is a prime example of that. There were student athletes that changed their decision, decided to go to Jackson State. There are student athletes that went to Jackson State, and I'm talking about any sport, in any school really, went to a school to play and didn't really worry about the degree options, like their majors that they could choose from. And now things have changed. Now you're going to have kids in the transfer portal, meaning they are going to try to get playing time at another institution, all because this possibly wasn't the place they should have been in the first place. So that's my stance on it. It's a business. Deion Sanders can do whatever Deion Sanders wants to do. But I just don't like the transition and what we saw based on his words and what he was trying to do. Because as now as I listen to a lot of what he's saying, he's trying to apply the same rhetoric and the same tone, but doesn't apply because it's a different place. It doesn't apply because the institution has not had the same challenges that not only did Jackson State have, but any HBCU. So all I ask is that in this new place, focus on your new mission, your new purpose, whatever the calling God has given you for Colorado. But I know for a fact, it cannot be the same based on the history, the development, and the creation of HBCUs. All right, friends, that's a wrap for another episode, and I hope you walk away saying, dang, yup, she said it. If you have any questions, any feedback, you want to reach out to me or contact me, the best way to do it is via email. It is bfcateam@gmail.com. It will always also be in the description of this episode, including my website. I would love to hear from you. I'll also put my email down. So make sure you leave a review, share this with a friend, make sure you download and save the podcast. We're trying to get back on our feet. I should say I'm trying to get back on my feet with the podcast. So as always, I support you for listening. And I'd be so appreciative if you shared this podcast with a friend. Be blessed, everyone, and have a great week.